SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
And we are back again. We are here and back again after a very long hiatus with a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the show where we talk about everything that concerns the Hobbit, the story, the inspiration to the story, the backstory, and of course, this amazing production that is underway in New Zealand. And at the helm, of course, our favorite director, Peter Jackson. Joining me today is my good friend, Dave Kale. Dave, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and welcome back to both of us.
and welcome back to all our listeners. And we've actually seen a huge increase of listeners over the winter break. So welcome to all of you that are listening for the first time. You might have listened to some previous episodes. We're glad to have you as a new listener, and we hope you enjoy our bantering about The Hobbit. And oh my goodness, do we have stuff to talk about today? Because December, even though it was a very busy month for all of us, and that is also partially the reason that we couldn't record new episodes, because the both of us were very busy and traveling and whatnot. But despite the busy nature of December, December also brought us that which we have longed for a very long time. And my prediction actually came true, is the trailer of The Hobbit, and it was actually attached to the movie Tintin, just as I assumed it would be. And mm-hmm. Tintin, by the way, also, of course, produced by Peter Jackson, is now out in the entire world. And I hope that our listeners have had the occasion to watch it. Did you see Tintin?
Believe it or not, I just saw it this past weekend.
Oh, really? What did you mm-hmm. think?
I enjoyed it a lot. So I went with my girlfriend, Teresa, and both of us sort of had the same reaction, which was, well, that was really fun. We really liked it and stuff. But it sort of, we didn't find it terribly memorable at like an hour after it, we weren't like, wow, yeah, that was really great. It was like, yeah, you know,
I didn't
find myself really like excited about the prospect of a sequel either. At the end, you know, they left it open and it was kind of like,
They end the story at a very, weird moment. And it's actually in the middle, if you look at the original albums on which this, first movie was based, mm-hmm. they stop with part one. And I thought it was kind of risky to do that because of course, Tintin is a franchise that might be very familiar in for us Europeans and in Australia and New Zealand, where people were, you know, grew up with Tintin. But in the United States, which is still the biggest market, Tintin is virtually unknown. People think of a dog when they hear the name Tintin, like Rin Tintin.
Unfortunate.
And so ending the movie with not even a really spectacular cliffhanger, but it's just like, yeah, there's more to this story. Just wait and see. I thought it was a bit strange, but I love the way that they kind of brought the comic book to life.
I like that opening scene where he's getting his portrait drawn
by Hergé. Yes,
that was brilliant the way they did that.
Of course, this is The Secrets of the Hobbit, so we will not expand too much on Tintin.
Our listeners should go see it and support Peter Jackson, and I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yes, it is a very enjoyable, it's kind of Indiana Jones-y in style. And if you want to hear more about the backstory and the origin of Tintin and hear a very detailed analysis of all the Tintin albums, including the ones that will tell the story that will happen after, you know, if there are going to be sequels, make sure you listen to The Secrets of Tintin, which is a show on SQPN that exploded in terms of listenership. We rose almost overnight to 15,000 listeners for that show. So it's one of the biggest shows I've done so far. And so go check that out. Just go to tintin.sqpn.com. But as I said, we're not here to talk about Snowy and Tintin, but we're going to talk about The Hobbit, and more specifically about this amazing trailer that came out.
Get down. Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I ain't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't tell me anything unnatural.
So refresh my memory, Dave. When did this trailer come out? It was just before Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was right. It was sort of like mid-December. Whenever it was that Tintin was released in the U.S. I can't. No, wait. Actually, it was originally released on iTunes. I forgot about that.
Oh, interesting.
That was really that was really exciting. So there were a bunch of us. The Thursday before Christmas, actually. So December like 22, December 22nd, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And so there were people all around the world on theonering.net and on Middle Earth Network and places like that who were all just sitting there refreshing this one new iTunes, iTunes trailer page waiting for it to pop up. And it was infuriating because on some of the Facebook pages, people are like, oh, we just got to watch it. And other people are like, what? Wait, won't load for me. What's going on? And eventually there were YouTube links also. I don't even know if they were fully legitimate. So finally people got to watch it. And it was pretty – that was a fun experience. I liked the way – I kind of liked the fact that they did it that way as opposed to having it first release in the theaters.
Yes. Because you would have seen the bootleg recordings of it, and it would underwhelm. Whereas now we immediately got to see it in glorious HD and just with perfect sound, and the impact was huge. It was really amazing.
And we got to have a communal experience then with all of our Hobbit fans around the world. So and it wasn't disrupted by like crying children in a theater.
Exactly. I'm looking at one of the uploads here on YouTube, and it has already been watched almost 13 million times. 13 million times. Imagine the marketing value of that trailer. And I think just looking at the news right before Christmas, it was all over the planet. And all of a sudden, I saw reactions on Twitter, on Facebook, of people like, oh, there are going to be new movies about The Hobbit? That is so cool. And I think I already mentioned this in one of our shows, but there was one person who actually, or was it you who told me that reacted like, oh no, I can't believe they're Hollywood has no shame, and they're bringing back this Gandalf character, and they're just stealing everything from The Lord of the Rings. Like, dude, it's the same story. That person really thought it was kind of a ripoff of the original Lord of the Rings movies to make a quick buck.
It really is. Those unscrupulous Hollywood types just can't let well enough be alone.
Oh, my goodness. But I cannot wait to talk with you about the trailer. And what we're going to do is I'm going to play the trailer in small bits and pieces. And then we'll stop it and talk about, whatever we noticed. And, of course, this has been done by many podcasts and many blogs as well, but we just want to add our two cents. And of course,
it hasn't been done like this.
It hasn't been done on The Secrets of the Hobbit. So here we go. The following preview has been approved for appropriate audiences, whatever that may be. But consider yourself part of the appropriate audience. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this show.
My dear Frodo, you asked me once if I had told you everything there was to know about my adventures. While I can honestly say I have told you the truth, I may not have told you all of it.
So there we go. The opening scene is a beautiful shot of the Shire and actually of Bag End. And Frodo is there, of course. Which was surprising. I didn't expect us to see Frodo in the trailer. And Bilbo, who walks out of Bag End and looks down, and Frodo is on the ledge below. And I was all giddy at that first shot because I was like, I have been standing there, exactly there. You know, I even have a photo to prove it, that I was standing right there in front of Bilbo's house. And then the second thing that I noticed was the tree in the background. Now, I don't think that's the party tree that you see. I think it's a tree more on the right side of the premises. And it was quite damaged. On the top of the tree was kind of barren. And we know that for the party tree, they actually put in place an incredible program to help that tree regain its health, because it has been, you know, they had some very dry years, and the tree was in very bad state. And so the party tree actually looks a lot more glorious than the tree you see in the background there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there was a bit of a debate on the web, and I don't know exactly what to think of it, but people said that actually the character of Bilbo that walks out of his house, it is not what's his name?
Oh, Ian Holm.
It's not Ian Holm, because we know that Ian filmed all his scenes over in the UK, and he never went to New Zealand for this. So, what's your take on that, Dave? Do you think it's him? Is it face replacement?
That's an interesting point. I'm looking at it. I'm making it, blowing it up to full screen, peering at him with my eyes squinted. Mm-hmm. I could imagine that's not Ian Holm. Maybe that you know. I mean, they do amazing stuff with body doubles and stuff these days. So
it's clearly,
that wouldn't surprise me if that's not him.
It's clearly someone who is there. It's not. It's mm-hmm. not you know, green screened in or anything. It looks too natural there. But it's filmed from a distance, so you can't really see the facial features. So it could just be a stand-in, and then later on they might actually, you know, add.
It might not even be Elijah Wood for all we know.
Well, no, Frodo is definitely Elijah Wood, I think. I mean, why wouldn't it? But
it's hard to imagine why it wouldn't be. But you can't even really, you can't see him either. You only get to see his back and like his you know, distant profile. So I bet that's probably not Ian Holm. I think I concur with the pundits on the internet.
But we also know that of course post production is not. Well, it has started, but I don't think it's likely that they've already started to work on these sequences. Mm-hmm. So it might just be footage that will be changed afterwards or still modified a little bit. It's not uncommon.
Not even used.
Well, I think it's – I mean, the shot looks great, so why wouldn't it? Some people speculated that Bilbo might be played in that particular scene by Martin Freeman. So that it's just Martin Freeman wearing the same clothes and everything and the wig, either the face or anything like that would be replaced by Ian later.
Oh,
on.
Oh, that's
Ian
interesting.
Holm.
Yeah, with all the stuff that they can do with special effects these days, with pasting other people's faces onto other people's bodies and changing the shape and size of people's
bodies.
In the digital film, I mean, it could be anybody, it could be anything.
Yes. Well, and then the next thing we see is actually the inside of Bag End. And of course, that is probably on location. I guess that they must have duplicated part of the set in London, where Ian Holm was. And it's just a very small part. You don't see the entire home. You just see the room where he's writing. And it's dark outside, right? It's happening during the night. So do you have any is there anything that we can deduce from that in terms of, you know, what he's actually writing? And is it the red book? Is it?
I don't know. You know, what's weird is it's in the first distant shot when you're looking at his back through the that rounded door frame. Mm-hmm. It's night outside. When they switch to the next shot where it's the close up of him, you can see it's actually light outside.
Oh, yes, indeed. Indeed it is.
A little strange.
So that might be another scene. It's kind of hard to tell who that is. I'm not even sure that in the first scene where you just see him from the back that is Ian Holm. It could be just
could be that body double again.
Could be.
Martin Freeman.
Or even a child dressed up as as Ian Holm.
Maybe Martin Freeman was just trying on the costume for fun and they decided to film him.
Who knows? but it's pretty cool. It looks similar to what we've seen in the opening of The Lord of the Rings, in the extended version.
They're definitely tugging at our sort of memories of the Lord of the Rings films with this opening.
And even the camera movement, you know, where it just slowly approaches Bilbo riding. It's something that we have seen in the extended version. The only difference is that it is night, and so perhaps they did that on purpose, just to make sure that we know that this is not lifted from the original Lord of the Rings scene. But they do, and this happens all the time in the trailer, there are very strong references to the kind of visuals that we already know from the Lord of the Rings, because a lot of the people that are going to watch this are very familiar with the Lord of the Rings, and they need to sell the idea of a prequel and reassure people that it's still going to be just as cool as the Lord of the Rings.
Right. And they have to appeal to every Lord of the Rings fan, ranging from people like us who've read the books and are just in love with Tolkien to people who think that this is somehow a ripoff of the original Lord of the Rings films.
Unbelievable. Well, let's continue the trailer and see what else we can discover here. By the way, the face of Ian Holmes, it doesn't seem to have changed that much. A bit older, perhaps. I don't know. I couldn't see much difference between the Ian Holmes that we know from... or is it Holm or Holmes? I never know.
Holm. Ian Holm, Sherlock Holmes.
There you go. That's why I got confused. But he doesn't really look very different. And of course, the wig helps.
I may not have told you all of it.
Bilbo Baggins. I'm looking for someone to share in an adventure.
I can't just go...
Now, interesting here that we get, the first look of Bilbo, the young Bilbo. And What struck me are the bright colors of his clothes. And the motifs on it are very like plants and everything and flowers, and I think that is actually faithful to the original story and the descriptions that we get from Tolkien, that hobbits just like bright colors and they like orange and they like yellow and green, and so it's very cool to see that reflected in his clothes.
Yeah, I do like that, and he's a fun contrast to Gandalf. I know there's lots of wonderful moments in the trailer, but by far my favorite moment, the part that gives me, and you know, there's the song and everything, the part that gives me goosebumps that I find most exciting is our first glimpse of Martin Freeman as Bilbo, because it's just, I look at him, I'm like, oh, he's so good. He's a fantastic, and you know, nothing. I love the original Hobbits. In my opinion, Martin Freeman's a superior actor to any of the original Hobbits. Mm-hmm. He's just awesome. His facial expressions are great, and so this first shot of him, very Bilbo-like, sitting here in his
smoking
bright
his pipe.
Yellow vest, smoking a pipe, looking at Gandalf. You know, a bit skeptically, sort of like, why is this crazy old man bothering
me? And very, very calm. I mean, Frodo, when we first see Frodo in The Lord of the Rings, he's all excited and he's jumping up and down because he sees Gandalf. And here, the contrast with Bilbo couldn't be bigger. It's like, Bilbo, like, yeah, whatever. Who's this guy?
Yes.
And
so I love this one little shot of Martin Freeman sitting there as Bilbo. I'm very excited to see the how much they keep from the exchange in the book about the good morning and all that.
Yeah,
so.
And Bilbo also looks more serious than the character of Frodo, and of course much older than Frodo was in the original story. And I think that's a good thing, because otherwise it would seem like this is kind of a repeat of what we've already seen. Mm-hmm. And so I love the way that this Bilbo is more mature in a certain way and perhaps more wary of what's ahead of him than Frodo was. Frodo is kind of this bright-eyed hobbit, like, yeah, sure, no problem. Let's go for it. This, you know, Freeman definitely... radiates this like, I don't want to move here. I'm sitting here on my bench and I'm planning on sitting here for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then interesting detail about Gandalf's staff. Did you see the speculation online about that? His wooden staff looks slightly different from other scenes that we know from the Lord of the Rings. And here it's almost as if the knot at the end of the staff is very tight. And in scenes in The Lord of the Rings, especially when he turns into Gandalf the White, I think his staff is much more as if the whole thing is alive and it has opened over time. So it's not a dead tree, but it's actually a living, whatever magical planet it is.
I did hear people saying that it was that it looked different even from his Gandalf the Grey staff in the previous movies.
Yes.
I rather suspect this is one of those things where people will read too much into it. You know,
I kind of like the idea that it's perhaps a magical thing. I mean,
could be.
If it's on purpose, I applaud them for it because it's a detail that you won't really notice. But you know, if the staff is kind of an extension of the character of Gandalf, it makes sense that it changes with Gandalf, and that it just, you know, grows and I don't know. Blossoms, not really, but it's. I'm thinking back of the staff of Moses, which also at one point turns into a snake and is alive. You know, it's not just a dead object, but it's an object that has certain powers. So I don't know.
It's in an adventure.
I can't just go running off into the blue. I am a Baggins.
Wait,
of Bagend.
Now, here we see Bilbo. In sitting in an old chair, drinking what looks like a cup of tea or something, a very very British type of hobbit, and while he is saying, you know, I'm just not going to go on this adventure right away, you see pictures of the Shire, and this is stuff that is again similar to what we've seen and yet different. There is, like, you see Bilbo, I think, you know, was probably getting groceries or something like that. And I mean, he carries and he has different clothes. He's now wearing a blue suit.
I love that blue jacket.
A blue jacket, yes. It still has the orange thing underneath. And what looks like almost tweed trousers, like this kind of brownish stuff that we used to wear in the 70s. And it's almost as if he's doing some shopping, perhaps for the dwarves or something. But I don't remember what this could be in the story. But
I'm guessing these are just sort of, I mean, so because we've watched Lord of the Rings before The Hobbit, and a lot of fans, unfortunately, may not have read the books, and in particular may not have read The Hobbit, because it's never what people expect when they come to it from the Lord of the Rings. It's you know, a lot more lighthearted. I think that there'll be a lot of people that aren't familiar with this idea of Bilbo as this kind of Shire homebody who wouldn't want to go on an adventure. You know, the whole Baggins Took tension that takes place in the book. So I'm gonna guess that we're gonna get a lot of shots early in the movie of Bilbo just kind of bumming around the Shire, going shopping, doing very routine, normal Baggins type things, to really impress upon us this idea that this is not a guy that, on the surface, when you look at him, would be going on an adventure with 13 dwarves to fight dragons and get treasure and whatnot.
Right.
So I think we're just going to get a lot of scenes of him shopping, sitting around, talking to people, probably making statements that suggest that he's a very sort of normal guy who doesn't like anything out of the ordinary.
Right, so it might be just on purpose that these mundane scenes are part of the of the introduction to his character.
Yep, that's my just totally uninformed speculation.
Now, don't you love that huge pig in the background? That just makes
I do.
It,
and after having watched the projection video, I'm now looking for all the animals because they had so many.
But it's so much fun that they actually took a larger than life pig to make the hobbits look normal size. You know?
Yeah, that is very very impressive.
Normal pigs aren't this big, so I just think that they took the biggest pig that they could find so that it makes the whole scene very believable. And lots of other details. I suppose that this is taking place in front of the inn at the other side, on the left side of the bridge near the lake. That's kind of what it looks like to me.
Yeah, but maybe. I'm not really sure. But
I love the colored umbrellas in the background, and it just totally matches what we know from the way that this world was established in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Let's see, what else was there to say? So I suppose that he's talking to Gandalf when he's saying that he doesn't want to go on an adventure, and this is the conversation that took place before the arrival of the dwarves.
Yeah, this is one of the first conversations he has before the dwarves. Yeah.
Okay.
Or I guess it could. It's possible. Maybe it's a sort of a sidebar conversation after the dwarves have arrived and gone to bed. Maybe.
Who knows? Yeah.
Into the blue. I am a Baggins.
Wait.
Now that wait, you see him running, and he has this very large sheet of paper with writing on it. It's the same contract that we've seen in one of the earliest photos that were published.
Mm-hmm.
And this must be the contract that they make him sign, where he actually, you know, commits himself to the adventure.
Yep.
And I've read through several long analyses of the trailer, and so there's a lot of speculation on what exactly are we looking at, and is this when he is trying to follow the dwarves and he's jumping over some fence, and but then there was some debate on, well, how does he have his backpack, because in the story he doesn't have time to gather his belongings. He's literally jumping into the adventure and he has no time to pack, whereas here he is actually carrying a backpack. So some minor tidbits and details that fans are still debating about, whether, you know, there was some let's say poetic license when creating when recreating this story.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't think it's too far-fetched, because when he catches up to the dwarves, they have a cloak for him. And so it could be that when he got up in the morning and found the contract, there was maybe a bag packed for him there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure, regardless, he's not going to have any handkerchiefs.
And he's on a pony in one of these scenes, or at least it looks like a pony, but it must be some kind of a horse. But that they made look like a pony for because of the size of the, I don't know, the actor. I was just wondering, it might be just a horse, a type of horse that looks like a pony. Because, of course, they need similar ponies for the dwarves as well.
Yeah, I think where was that? We read something about these horse, the horses that they're using for this. It's a very specific kind of, it's not like a complete, it's not like a full horse, but it's also not a pony completely.
It's like a Shetland
pony or something, because it's really also very hairy too, if you look at it.
Yeah. And I like that it's actually misbehaving a little bit, and Bilbo, mm-hmm. and it just, you see, the look in his face is like, I don't like this. I don't want to be on this horse. I don't want to be on this adventure.
Off Baggin.
Bilbo, allow me to introduce Fili, Kili, Oin, Loin, Darlin, Balin, Biffa, Bofa, Bomba, Dory, Nori, Ori, and the leader of our company, Sorin Oakenshield.
Now, fantastic, this introduction to the dwarves, because we see the dwarves in many different situations, and every second you see a little glimpse from the movie. And so there's a lot there to enjoy. And I don't know exactly when the Gandalf is saying this. I suppose there is a scene inside of Bag End where the dwarves have just, you know, stumbled over the threshold because they were eavesdropping probably on the conversation. And that's where we get the introduction. But the images that we see are from different parts of the mm-hmm. movie. And so the first scene is inside Bag End. But then the first dwarf that we see is actually using a bow and arrow. And you can actually see Bilbo in the background there, looking kind of distraught. So I wonder where this is. It looks like it's in a forest, so could this be Mirkwood, or I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, and Bilbo's, look at his coat, is all dirty and muddy.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is post Misty Mountains, maybe.
Hmm. Looks like a very heroic dwarf, though, the first one. I don't ask me the names, because I don't know.
So I'm skipping ahead. I'm looking at the scene of him in Gollum's, of Martin Freeman in Gollum's cave, and I think he's wearing the same, is that the same jacket that he's wearing in this scene?
I don't know. Red, dark
maroon jacket, I think. So so maybe he's wearing that same jacket the whole time, so of course he is. But Mirkwood seems like a good guess, or maybe right after the Misty Mountains on the way to Bjorn's Hall, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Could be. We don't know what the dwarf's aiming at, but some enemy.
Oh, you know, now I recall in Mirkwood, there's a scene with a bow and arrow when they're trying to, I believe they've encountered the river. Oh, it's when they try to shoot a deer.
Oh.
So I bet that's it. It's probably the scene in Mirkwood where they see a deer and they try to shoot it.
Excellent.
To get some food, and they're in Mirkwood, lost and hungry.
All right, that's identified then. I think that's likely. The next dwarf that we see is covered in cobwebs. And this is the one that looks most like Gimli in you know, his beard and everything. And then someone is holding, on the left side of the image, is holding some kind of a portrait. And we don't know exactly who that is. But again, there was a great analysis of this on theonering.net. And fans have been speculating about this. Like, is this, you know, is this actually young Gimli, for instance? Because this is his father that we see, isn't it? The one covered in cobwebs.
Yeah, that's a good point. Interesting point.
I'm trying to find the analysis on theonering.net because it was just excellent in all the details. And, you know, that's the advantage of having such a big community of experts, that the moment the trailer hit, you get like tons and tons of information and fans debating, no, it can't be this and it should be that. It's fantastic.
One thing is, I don't think that hand belongs to the dwarf picture there.
No, I think it's someone else who shows it. It could be an elf.
Or maybe it's another dwarf who's tied up and is just holding it. Or maybe it's Bilbo, when he's trying to rescue them, picks it up off the ground or something. So that's an interesting shot. That's – I don't know.
Oh, here it is, frame-by-frame analysis.
By the way, we did skip over one dwarf.
Okay.
So if you go back just a tiny bit,
yeah,
there's – I don't remember which one it is, but there's the dwarf with the gray beard that's braided up, and he's got the little he's got one of the ear thing to hear better, it looks like.
Oh, yes. Yeah, indeed. And actually the one with who is throwing the plate as well. And this is one of the scenes where they are, just freaking out Bilbo because they're they're doing the dishes and then just throwing the plates at one another. And fans were also wondering whether we will hear a song while they are doing the dishes, because there's a song in the book about that. I don't know.
Me neither.
So Keely is the one with the bow, and then Oin is the one with the hearing device.
Yep. And then the redheaded one's Gloin, which is who is Gimli's father, of course.
There you go. And actually, I really like that idea of at least one of the dwarves having trouble hearing, because of course that can lead to many jokes of him misunderstanding stuff. Let's see. I'm looking at the analysis here about the object, because I thought that's the kind of stuff that I love about analyzing trailers like this. So what could it be? Here, as Megwen speculates, this could be either a miniature of Drogo, father of Frodo. I don't know, because it appears to resemble images on the mantelpiece in Bag End. I don't know why that would be there. Doesn't make sense. Other people think it could be an image of Gimli, because the frame looks kind of dwarf-like, and it's very kind of geometrical and angled. It just has a dwarven feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be a Gimli without a beard. I don't know. Yeah.
Or a very fine beard. It looks like there's sort of stuff around his mouth. I'm also wondering if maybe it's actually a picture of one of the dwarves' wives.
Could also be, yes.
Yeah.
Gimli's mother, perhaps.
Yeah.
and we know that female dwarves also have facial hair. And you can see a little bit of it. So that might actually be the case. Anyway, and then of course we see Dwalin, who is bald and has a huge beard. And in the background, I don't know what we see, but it looks like Goblin Town. There's definitely goblin structures in the background there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's got to be Goblin Town.
And he's fighting someone, so this could be part of the whole attack of the orcs and everything. Or some people speculate that this might be part of a flashback in the Lonely Mountain when the dwarves first meet the dragon, Smaug. But I don't know. Doesn't seem to be... I don't think that they've already filmed that. That is probably for later. I don't know. Balin, who's also great looking, has this big, white, fluffy beard. And, you know, all these dwarves are so different from one another. Mm-hmm. And he looks like a Christmas dwarf, according to some people. Like Father Christmas in dwarf version. let's see who else is there in these images. Bifur has an axe in his head. Now that is strange. So you can see that there's like a part of it of an axe, and most of it is inside his brain. So how likely is that?
Yeah, that's really strange.
Yeah, there's a bit of controversy about that. You know, it's like this is kind of jumping the shark. This is, you know, the axe in his central nervous system. I don't know. Medically not possible, according to some people. But then again, these are dwarves. What do we know about dwarven brains? There might be no activity there, right there in the center.
Yeah, maybe that's a non-essential part of his brain.
Who knows? We see Bofur, who has this very goofy mustache
and
crazy hat. And this is probably a scene from Rivendell, because in the background you can see kind of the orange glow sunset.
Colors are very similar to what we've come to expect with Rivendell, and there's kind of a structure in the back. The only other thing it could be maybe is Bjorn's Hall, but it feels like Rivendell, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes, definitely. The lighting is definitely Rivendell. And some people call it like this is like Beaufort Longstocking because of the shape of his mustache. Kind of reminds of the hair. Do you know Pippi Longstocking in the U.S.?
Yes, we do.
It's a Swedish children's series, and so, I don't know.
Yeah, he does have a very Pippi Longstocking look, minus the mustache and beard.
Yes. And something is flying around in the picture, so I guess this must be a food fight or something like that. Because the next scene that we see is of Bumbur, and he's holding something in his hand. I don't know what it is, kind of slug-like or chocolate or... It's kind of hard to see what it is, but they're definitely kind of... it looks as if they're throwing around food for some reason. This could also be in Rivendell. And then...
We get some nice comedy with Bomber, too.
Yes. Yeah. And he is, of course, the overweight dwarf that has to be carried around at one point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he falls asleep. And then... Bombur is seen crashing into the ground. It's kind of hard to determine where this is. It looks in the forest, or could this be in Bjorn's Hall? I don't think this is in Rivendell, this scene, but I'm not sure.
No, I think you're right.
Then we see, back in Bag End, and we see Dory, who's yep. messing around with some plates and cups and everything. You don't really get to see much of his character, although he seems to be very, you know, he's got fancy braided hair and everything. So perhaps he's a slightly more cultivated dwarf. Nori, are these two brothers or nephews or cousins or?
I think they're brothers. I think all the dwarves
like
with the similar
Dory,
sounding
Nori,
names
Ori.
Are generally brothers.
Okay. And they definitely have similar hairstyles. Nori also has braided, you know, hair and everything. Mm-hmm. Huge ears. Let's see. And then an Ori is drinking something out of a wooden mug. A pitcher of ale, probably also in Bag End, I guess. And then they show us the the kind of the royal shot of Torrin Oakenshield, and played by Richard Armitage, and he's sitting on a pony as well. But it's kind of, he's filmed from below, and he looks almost like a human sized person there. But it's the camera angle, and he's in the forest, and he looks very regal and very much like a leader of the pack. So I really like that. The king under the mountain.
Yeah, a lot of people have commented that they think he, you know, and we talked about this before when the pictures were released, but they think he looks sort of younger than they expected. But but he was very young for a dwarf at this point, especially for being as highly ranked as he was, king under the mountain. So I like it. I like his look.
Me too. I think it fits the mental image that I had. So Thorin Oakenshield, we've been introduced to all the dwarves. And what I like about this, you know, being part of the trailer is that this too is important to an audience that might not be familiar with the story of The Hobbit. They need to know that this is not the same fellowship, you know, where these are the new main characters. And just seeing the glimpses, I don't know, it made me totally excited.
Yeah, I definitely am excited. The dwarves, the look of the dwarves, and just when we get these scenes and shots of them are the parts that excite me a lot.
Yeah. No brightly colored clothes. I think that this is one of our earliest discussions, I think. It's like, what will they do with the description in Tolkien where they are wearing these like very bright purple and orange and green coats and everything, but none of that here.
Mm-hmm.
It looks very natural. Yeah. Very much like what you expect, I think.
I think it's still, they're still very, we talked about this when the pictures came out. It's still, they're sort of coats and cloaks and stuff are colorful, and there's definitely a different color motif for each dwarf, just like each of them has different hairstyles and looks.
Yeah.
But they're not bright pastel color.
It's not
color,
like Disney's goofy. Snow White.
Yes.
It's not like that at all. And then we get singing.
Thorin Oakenshield.
Far over the misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old.
So what did you think of the singing? I was so surprised that they included that.
But you liked it, right?
Yes, absolutely. I just didn't expect it.
I'm glad they're acclimating us now with the trailer to the idea that there will be singing in this this thing.
Yeah. And it's not at all the kind of singing that I expected from the dwarves. If you read the poems or the lyrics in the book, I always imagine dwarves to, you know, do Disney tunes. It's more upbeat, more rhythmic. And this
was especially
very...
if you've grown up watching the Rankin and Bass cartoons.
Oh my goodness, yes. you're a fan of that one, right?
I have a love-hate relationship with it. I recognize it's pretty awful, but I kind of enjoy it anyway.
But there's a lot of singing in that one, and it's different from this. This is very Irish, very Celtic in a way.
So as we were discussing this with some of my Middle Earth Network colleagues, they did point out, we were talking about some of the songs which we think are a little sillier than this one was.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the fact that really we have mental images of how the song should sound. Mm-hmm. And those, if you've watched the Rankin and Bass cartoons, they've probably been polluted by their versions of them. But many of these songs are really could be set to a variety of tunes and different emotional feels, because they're really just poetry that Tolkien composed with probably no particular theme in mind. So I'm not surprised that they you know, can take it and go a route like this. And I like it. This I think really suits this song. I'm hoping we're going to get at least one kind of silly, jovial song, maybe the plate breaking song or Bilbo making fun of the spiders or something. Or the one that I really want to see is the elves singing in Rivendell.
That'd be great. Yes.
Making fun of the dwarves. I'm really hoping we get that, because that shows us a different side of the elves than that we never saw in The Lord of the Rings.
Absolutely.
But we'll see. I think they could do it.
And there was an interesting speculation also on the web about this song and why it is in the trailer, saying that this could very well be the melody that will carry the entire score. Because we know that Peter Jackson has asked for kind of hummable melodies here. Already wanted that for The Lord of the Rings, and of course we all hum along with that music, and so this is a melody that you can probably also do an orchestral version, and it has this, it's very recognizable as a melody, and yep. it's beautiful, and so I wouldn't be so, and it is also my first reaction was like, oh, this sounds exactly like the song at the end of The Lord of the Rings sung by Aragorn. During the crowning ceremony.
Well, I think that songs like this, in addition to the melody being hummable, and I completely agree, I suspect this is going to be the main theme of the films. I think also songs like this that don't have a really, really wide range of notes and allow people to kind of sing this almost chant style singing, mm-hmm. works very well for people who aren't trained singers.
Yeah, yeah. So for dwarves.
I don't know what kind of training Richard Armitage has, but I'm sure amongst those 13 dwarves, there's got to be at least half of them who can't sing.
It's possible. Although, you know, it's not very – I mean, if an actor can't sing, you know, he doesn't have to.
It's true.
It's easier to replace the – I mean, they did that since the West Side Story, you know?
Yes, that's true. But this is the kind of song that it's pretty easy for someone to kind of fake a bit.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I love the shift in tone of the trailer. Once this song starts, you see these looming images of pondering dwarves looking very seriously, almost as if they are aware of the gravity of the adventure, or what's at stake, or something like that. And there's kind of this longing for the glorious past of the dwarves, and there's this shot of Gandalf. That almost looks identical to a shot that we know from Lord of the Rings trilogy, where he is, he has the ring, or he has learned about what the ring can do, and that the ring that Bilbo has is actually the One Ring, and you see him smoking his pipe in Bag End, and it's just, again, it's like, oh my goodness, what is about to happen? It's this very. I don't know. It's kind of ominous almost.
Yeah. What I like about the way they've organized this too is the fact that it really matches the description of what happens in the book when the dwarves start singing, because it shifts the tone of the book. It shifts Bilbo's mood. It conjures up these kinds of images in his mind. Mm-hmm. It's almost like magic. Songs always have power in magic in Tolkien, and they really evoke that here with as you point out, that it just really instantly changes the tone of the trailer from the lighthearted beginning and the, you know, some of the goofy bomber breaking the thing and Bilbo running without his handkerchief and stuff. I mean, immediately shift into a much more somber and serious frame of mind. So
yeah.
It's great. I like that effect.
And they definitely combine in this trailer alone, and we're talking about a couple of minutes, so it's really well done. They mm-hmm. combine both this almost fairy tale children's book kind of atmosphere at the beginning of the trailer, and then here it shifts to this more epic scale, and it's at this point that we see the map of Middle Earth, and we get reminded, you know, as kind of this 3D helicopter view of the map, and then we see scenes of Gandalf, and he's in a very desolate place, some kind of old rune or castle, and I think this is Dol Guldur where he is.
I concur.
And he's looking for the necromancer, I think. And this very, it looks, I just explored this region in the game Lord of the Rings Online, and it's similar. It's very similar. So it's immediately like, I know this place. I've been there. And yeah, you see thorns and skulls and everything. So looks great. Looks absolutely great. And Gandalf is also carrying a sword. So it's definitely a dangerous place to be. And it's open air, so it's not Goblin Town. It can't be Goblin Town. It's somewhere
yep.
outside.
Yeah, I think any scenes like this where we see Gandalf in a sort of dungeony, dark-like area by himself, it's safe to assume is when he's sneaking into Dol Guldur to discover the identity of the necromancer.
Yeah. It reminds me a bit of Weathertop, but it's, I don't know, it's slightly more... I think Dol Guldur, wasn't that built by the elves? I think it was. And then...
Wow, I'm ashamed to say I don't know off the top of my head the answer to who built Dol Guldur.
I don't know. I know
that. Have to look it up.
Numenoreans built Weathertop, but
this might. Yeah. I'm guessing it's either the Numenoreans or Sauron himself built it. Mm.
I thought it was older than Sauron.
It could be.
I think he just occupied it, but it's been a while since I looked that up. But and then the sword itself can that be Glamdring?
Yes.
And he's also...
He'll have it by then.
Yeah. He's also wearing a silver scarf. So, I don't know. I'm confused about the chronology of this scene. But I guess this takes place after the troll incident. I don't know.
Yep. This scene here where he's... it almost certainly comes after the troll incident. Because yeah. That's pretty early. That's going to be very early in the film.
Yep.
So this is right before the dwarves head into Mirkwood. This is where we get into the parallel storylines of the dwarves and Bilbo's quest to Erebor, where they travel through Mirkwood, encounter the elves, go to Lake Town, and then encounter Smaug in the mountain and all that kind of stuff. And then the parallel storyline is Gandalf and the White Council discover the necromancer's identity. Start battling him. I guess the one thing that now that I'm saying that, I'm not 100% clear on the chronology either. I'm not sure if when Gandalf leaves the company, I'm not sure if he goes to Dol Guldur and sneaks in, or if he's already done that, already knows the necromancer's identity, and what he's doing is going to the White Council. Because there's a lot that happens between him leaving them at Mirkwood and meeting up with them again at the Lonely Mountain. So this could actually be a flashback scene. Maybe he's already – at the time of The Hobbit, maybe he's already knows who the necromancer is. So I'm afraid I'm falling down on my job as so-called expert.
Well, you can't remember everything. But this could be right before – Gandalf meets with Thrain. And isn't Thrain also on a mission somewhere in Dol Guldur at one point?
He's in the dungeon. He decided he kind of went crazy in exile with Thorin, and he decides, I'm going to go back to the Lonely Mountain by myself. And he ends up getting with a party, of course. And he ends up getting they're on the I think the edges of Mirkwood, and one night they go to sleep, and the next morning they wake up and Thrain's gone. And it turns out he was kidnapped by the servants of Sauron and imprisoned in Dol Guldur.
Yeah. So this could be the point where they actually meet, or I don't know, have a fight or something like that. And this is Thrain the second, I think. Because there are a lot of similar names in the Dwarven world. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we the next scenes, I love these because we've seen this in the first production video. It's the set of Rivendell, of The Last Homely House. And my goodness, does it look glorious. Just beautifully lit, and you see Bilbo walking up the stairs, and then seeing the broken sword, the shards of Narsil.
Yep, it's a nice little Easter egg,
and it's great to see that again, because again it just harkens back to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and so the unsuspecting Tintin moviegoer will immediately identify that as, oh yeah, it's the same thing as we know about already. But I love the way, and you got to keep in mind that this set was reconstructed. It was completely built up again from the ground up. And so it's not that they left the set intact after they filmed the Lord of the Rings. It's amazing how, and it looks identical to what we've seen before. And the special effects here seem to be finished because you can see outside of the window and you see the you know, the valley of Rivendell. And so I guess that that is... oh my goodness, we're already approaching the end of our show. Holy moly!
The trailer.
I was planning on doing, you know, like both the production video and the trailer in one episode.
I'm telling you, this is why I said we may have to do a second episode this weekend.
I think we need to, yes. Because there are some very interesting other scenes here that we need to talk about. Especially there's this interesting scene between Galadriel and Gandalf.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, there's so much more in the trailer. Well, we'll keep that for the next show then. And we see Sting.
Right.
We see Sting, which I thought was awesome. Yeah, there's way
too. We didn't even get to Gollum or the Ring.
It's impossible. Oh wow. Oh well. Next show, there will be more about the trailer and more speculation. In the meantime, we still have a couple of minutes before the end of this this jingle. So I want to point people to our website, which is thehobbit.sqpn.com. And that's also where you can find information on how you can support this podcast and all the other shows that we produce over at the StarQuest Production Network. We're in the middle of our giving campaign, and we encourage our listeners to become part of the Friends of SQPN, which means you become a monthly sponsor of what we do, and in return, you get some perks and surprises later this year. So you can find more information on how to support us either by a one-time donation or a monthly sponsorship by going to sqpn.com, our main website, or to thehobbit.sqpn.com, which is the sub-website dedicated to this show. You can also listen to a brand new episode of The Secrets of Middle-Earth. It's a show that is recorded inside Middle-Earth, and together with Inga and Laura, I've been exploring part of the eastern side of the Mines of Moria. And so you hear more about the Mirror Lake, and we go looking for the Endless Stairs, where, of course, the fight between Gandalf and the Balrog took place. I think it's a very cool episode, and people have been begging us to produce more shows, more episodes of The Secrets of Middle-Earth. So there's a brand new one that we just recorded, so you can find that one at middleearth.sqpn.com. Dave, what's happening on Middle Earth Network and Middle Earth Radio? Is there you do another podcast there, which I absolutely love. Can you tell people how to listen to that and where to find it?
Are you referring to the Founders Inklings one?
Yes, exactly.
Yep. Just go to radio.mymiddle-earth.net. That the radio page is being updated like at this very minute, probably. Go over there and you'll find everything about our shows and our schedule and stuff. We're focusing a lot more right now on live shows and increasing our music collection and then promoting our podcasts when they get released. So definitely head over there and check it out. And then the most exciting announcement is that the Middle Earth Network's planning a tour to New Zealand sometime in the fall or maybe spring of 2013, but probably fall of 2012, right around the premiere of The Hobbit.
Very cool. Well, all that information can be found on the website of the Middle Earth Network.
And go to news.mymiddle-earth.net for all that stuff.
There you go. All right, thanks for listening, and see you next time on The Secrets of the Hobbit.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.